Never miss a minute of the Generic Live Show. Find us on iTunes. Just search the Generic Live Show and listen. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. So glad to be with us, whether you're listening to us live or on your hard drive. So glad to be with us here on a Sunday. Lots to see and lots to do. At the bottom of the hour, we'll be talking about the coup that happened in Turkey. We'll bring you all of the latest information, if there is any, at this time. Not when I last checked. 2 minutes ago, I last checked, and there was no new information. We'll bring you, of course, an opinion, a different perspective than ones that I presented in the last hour. Last hour, I presented an argument of, are we ready for government tyranny, essentially. At the bottom of the hour, I'll express an opinion about what would happen to neighboring places. Are our neighbors more willing to help us out in terms of needs? And I'm talking neighbors as in continental neighbors, by the way, not talking about physical neighbors, because, I shouldn't talk too loudly. But in the meantime, we've got Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull launched his government's innovation agenda. It still has a W in it, so I protest I still got it right. When Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull launched his government's innovation agenda, quote-unquote, according to Michael Kesiol, it was kind of zeal when he typically reserves for matters of technology, transport, and information. Quote, there has never been a more exciting time to be in Australian business, we were told. A variation of themes he introduced challenging for a Liberal leadership last September. Quote, there have never been so many opportunities on the horizons for Australians. This is what he said. We'll play that, of course, in a minute for you. Maybe. Oh, look, there's a gentleman on a bed. I don't really care. All right. A policy suite included incentives for startups, research, and a collaboration. Oh, we're cut away to this video now.
This is one-off announcement. This is not the first and last word of this government on innovation. This is a absolutely critical theme of our administration to ensure that we are always driving innovation, because I promise you, that is the future for, that is our future. It's the future for our jobs and ours, our children, our grandchildren. Innovation is a big cultural measure. It's something that we need to be better at in Australia and right across the board. And there's a lot of levers being pulled here, but there may well be more to come. There will be more to come, I have no doubt.
Okay, before I get to the rest of the article, a little bit short. Falls a little bit short on specifics there. Just a wee bit. You know, mark my words. I'm gonna make the Generic Live Show better for everyone. You could argue I have made the show better than what it originally was. I mean, if you listen to that first pilot episode I ever released back in 2013. Yeah, folks, we've been doing the show for over three years now, excuse me. March of 2013. Holy crap, we've been doing the show for 3 years now. It doesn't feel like it, because I've had to take too many hiatuses. But that, folks, is a story in of itself for another day. I will talk about that. But one day I will talk about how the Generic Live Show was born. It's in an archive somewhere, but I like bringing old stories back to the forefront. I mean, the point is, back then, I didn't say I was going to make the Generic Live Show a better place. But now, I'm saying it, 17th of July at 10:09, I'm saying I'm going to make the Generic Live Show better. I didn't say it back then, and now looking on it in retrospect to say that it is better, what Malcolm Turnbull should have said there. And I'm no correspondent to the Prime Minister whatsoever. As if you've listened to the show in the last month, you would know that. Go back to the archives to a part, I think it's a clip of a week that says that I handed out, and in there I disclaimed everything I was doing at the time. But anyway, I had someone come after me about that, by the way. I said, well, you have political biases and you shouldn't be in journalism. I think did I mention this at the time? I don't think I mentioned this at the time. Okay, well, actually, you know what? I'm having a ranty kind of day today. I'm having a ranty kind of day today. So, because there's, outside of this turkey stuff, there's not a whole lot going on this week. So we're having a bit of a slow news week. So hold in there, folks. The summer slump will be over soon. We'll have a Republican convention, so that'll stir things up. Where was I going with that point? I don't know where I was going with that point. Oh, the point was, I had someone come after me and say that I wasn't disclaiming everything, and I literally had, this was when I was doing the election stuff, oh, you shouldn't be covering an election because you have political bias. I said at the top of the show, I believe I said at the top of the show, if I didn't say it at the top of the show, I said it in the clip of the week, which is at the top of your, at the top of the feed, typically, at the top of the feed, and it says, anyway, in there, anyway. My point, overarching point was, you make those types of statements as you're looking back and saying, oh, look how technology and innovation has improved. I don't want to be on my shoulders. Technology has improved, and we're going to make technology better for small businesses, but there's some context. It just says we're going to make it better for businesses. Okay, that's all my point. That's all my point was. That's all my point. But the policy suite, allegedly, that he proposes, includes innovations for startups, research collaborations, might have been worthy and necessary. But the key plank in the coalition's re-election pitch is growing consensus was a failure. Okay, the review inside and out. Party ranks is that the PM's excitement was not shared by voters, particularly in marginal suburbs and regional seats. Where are we? Right, Roy, the Assistant Minister for Innovation, who lost his Queensland seat, was in many ways the personification of the innovation agenda. Youthful, agile, savvy. But he wasn't convinced the strategy worked either. He told the ABC 7:30 program that the coalition had lost, quote-unquote, the ground game and had failed to demonstrate why its economic agenda would enable their children and grandchildren to, quote, grow up in a better world, unquote. Instead, Mr. Turnbull spent most of his campaign appearing at places of industry, manufacturing centres, startup hubs, steelworks, construction sites, etc., etc. Let's see. Oh yeah, there's photos of him at places with Oculus Rifts on at a university. Him at a pub. I guess him with a hemorrhoid robot in Japan in December. So, and not an official partner. Harvey Norman selling mattresses is not an official sponsor. But if they do want to sponsor us, please, I need a new bed. This pretty much sums up the
freedom to fight.
This sets up Fairfax's Peter Martin sums up this article beautifully.
Fail is the watchword of Malcolm Turnbull's new $1.1 billion innovation package. Freedom not only for the businesses involved, but also for the Prime Minister himself, Malcolm Turnbull said, in the past, governments have been too concerned about getting packages such as this right, and that means not taking risks. He says he's prepared to take a few risks, and if things don't work, he'll simply change the program and try something else. Businesses that fail will be able to continue to trade while insolvent, something that's permitted in the US under so-called Chapter 11 bankruptcy rules, but hasn't been allowed in Australia. All they'll need to do is to employ a specialist in insolvency to help them work things out. As well as that, businesses that are declared bankrupt and companies which are declared bankrupt will be able to be back on their feet and trading again in 1 year rather than three. The idea is that businesses necessarily make mistakes. New ideas necessarily fail, and out of failure can come something that really works. As well as that, there are very big tax concessions for new investors, for investors piling into companies at the beginning of their life, and very limited requirements, the main one being that those investors have to stay investing in the company for just 3 years. Among other concessions, they get a capital gains tax holiday for 10 years. The other part of the package, around half of the $1.1 billion, is a restoration of grants. A lot of grants have been held in doubt, grants to parts of the CSIRO, the Government Science Agency, grants for the Square Array Telescope, grants for the new nuclear facility, the Synchron nuclear facility. All of these funds have now been unfrozen. They were held up in negotiations in the Senate over education funding. All up, it's not a very expensive program. The Prime Minister hopes the money's been used widely. He hopes businesses, like him, are prepared to fail.
That is Fairfax's Peter Martin explaining freedom to fail, which is another kind of plan that is being put into place along with all of this innovation agenda and policy prescriptions from Malcolm Turnbull. Interesting that he should mention that, and I wanted to bring this to you. I don't know why I didn't bring it to you before this date. Got an email in my inbox this week about Dick Smith. Remember Dick Smith? Remember good old Dick Smith? No, I'm not talking about... Yeah, actually, you know what? Yes. I'm not talking about the guy who ran and lost against Julie Bishop, by the way. Fun fact. Hang on a sec. Anyway, I'm back. Maybe. my stomach's been weird today. I'm weird today. The point I was making there, no, I'm not talking about the guy who makes peanut butter. I'm talking about the electronics company. Remember, they're two separate things. They're back on their feet, by the way. They're an online-only store. I got an email about some products that I was eyeing off, potentially, at the time, and how they weren't in the stores, but they could have been, like, in back stock in a warehouse somewhere that they weren't going to be sent up because receivership. Fun stuff. Long story short, I got an email in my inbox saying Dick Smith is now dicksmith.com.au, and it's okay. They're an online exclusive retail. Yes, a retailer. It's kind of their product range is kind of a bit spotty, but you get some good deals. But Dick Smith is back on its feet. I should have mentioned that. They never really went away, I guess. They went away for, what, a month? Was it a month? Probably wasn't. Wouldn't have been a month. When did Dick Smith officially close down? And, well, where we are. The 17th. Don't know. Anyway, the point is, they pretty much changed their business model to tailor to an online-only customer base. So, that's my point with that. So, there you go there. But the freedom to fail stuff is interesting perspective because freedom to fail is pretty much you can go bankrupt, change your business model, and be back up within a year. Well, technically then, Dick Smith broke the law. But apart from that, you heard it here first, folks. But apart from that, you know, they could have easily bypassed that law if they never actually closed all their physical stores down before launching their online store. That's how they could have got away with that. But that is pretty much what this innovation stuff is saying. You're right. You can have all these incentives and investments, still fail, but that's okay. Take a year off and come back and try again. And keep trying and keep trying. I mean, that's not how we're going to grow small business. I'm sorry. That's not how we're going to grow small business, by doing that, because then you're just saying, all right, it's your right to fail, keep failing, and we'll just keep throwing money at you. It's absurd. I'm for small business. I'm a person that I have a small business background. The point of the small business is to continually grow it gradually. You have to nest it and nurse it until it grows into what you want it to be. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show for Sunday. Well, Pokemon Go is a huge thing at the moment, but could it single-handedly save Nintendo? We'll give you all the details as we continue here on the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us. It's 10:20. Finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on a Sunday. Glad to be with us, whether you're listening to us live or on your hard drive. So glad you could be with us. Now, Pokemon Go is everywhere. We've had two stories, at least in today's episode, that are about Pokemon Go exclusively. It's taken over the world in the gaming industry, but for good reasons. The Telegraph in the UK has a story. They pondered the question, could Pokemon Go save Nintendo? It rhymes, but of course O rhymes with O. So, walk through any city centre or park this weekend, you might have noticed groups of smartphone users looking for even more engrossed in their devices than usual. Occasionally, one of the phones will buzz and its owner will hold it up if they're taking a photo with intense concentration. With a dexterous flick of the finger, hurl a virtual ball at a creature on the screen. If successful, they would have taken one more step towards becoming a Pokemon Master. Let's see, that's a good way to set it up. Almost overnight, Pokemon, short for Pocket Monsters, has gripped the world once again, 21 years after Nintendo released its first video game featuring Pikachu, Bulbasaur, and Charizard. The culprit has been Pokemon Go, a smartphone app developed by San Francisco Nintastic Labs and published by the Pokemon Company. A joint venture in which Nintendo, the famed Japanese video game firm behind Mario, Zelda, and others. Within days of the game's being released, it's become a mega viral success. By the end of the game's first weekend in the US, it had led with up to 7.5 million downloads. 2 days later, it was at 15 million downloads. The game only made it to British shores on Thursday, but by many eager British gamers had developed ways to download it. Where are we? Founded in 1889, Nintendo spent most of its 127 years as a congregate for those business rangers playing from playing cards, to taxis. It was known for the company hiring Portuguese developer Shigeru Miyamoto, said that wrong, in the 1970s, and its modern incarnation began. This is history I don't want to know. Despite struggling, Nintendo was a company first steeped in Japanese tradition. and it reluctant to shift to mobile gaming, but pressure mounted. One of Aitua's last major decisions before premature death from cancer last year was to move the company into a smartphone gaming by signing a partnership with with mobile developer DENA. Pokemon Go is a separate play released by independent Pokemon company, which Nintendo only has a 32% stake in. Oof! I bet they're kicking themselves about the only 32% stake in the company. But Pokemon Go could be the saving grace. Now, a quick analyze of the stats would tell you that Nintendo's share price, even in the last year, from July 16th, was around, in July 16th, 2015, was around 21.30, and kind of dipped around the 21 to 24 mark until it slid below $20 in around November and just kept going down to the lowest point of about 15.50. Yeah, around 15.50 it dipped down in around January. It had a boost around, it started climbing again in E3, and of course anticipation of Pokemon Go, and of course it surged from 17.75 all the way up in less than about a week, it from the 1st to the 11th of July surged up to $27. Of course, close of business on Friday, it surged up to, it's up 33.8. The game has in-game purchases as well, which, admittedly, yes, I have made a purchase to Pokemon Go. Admittedly, yes, I've done that. I've spent, I'd say, $3 so far, but I know people that have spent a whole lot more on the game because they say they don't walk, but they do walk, but they don't want to walk to specific places. It's weird. They don't want to walk to specific places, but they want to catch Pokemon from where they're sitting, but they want to walk to catch eggs. It's weird. People are weird. People are really weird. But the point of that was it is a free-to-play game, but with in-app purchases, which makes it a lot easier for Nintendo to say, hey, if you want more Pokeballs, if you're lazy, buy X amount of coins, and those Pokeballs can be yours. It's kind of a way of incentivizing people to spend money. It's a smart way, and you need to buy kind of, I'm saving up right now by battling gyms and that sort of thing, saving up for some more storage. You can pay for storage as well to upgrade your bag or your item storage, your Pokemon storage as well. It's kind of smart. It's smart to look at from a business perspective, Pokemon Go, but could it save Nintendo? Yeah, it probably could. Now that it's in the mobile game, and you've got Pokemon Sun and Moon. Thank you, Head. You're working today. Sun and Moon coming up later in the year. I believe that's coming out in November. I believe it's coming out on my birthday, November 19th. So if someone wants to buy me a 3DS and Pokemon Moon, I will love you long time. Thanks for joining us here on the Genetic Live Show for a Sunday. So glad to be with us. Well, we are going to analyze the attempted coup that happened in Turkey. Moving into something a little bit more serious. This attempted coup that happened by the military will bring you all of the details. And I want to bring you a different perspective on it than what you've probably been seeing around the place. Want to bring you a different perspective. First hour, I brought you a perspective. Are we ready for tyranny? My answer was no. But will our neighbours help us out on the micro and macro level if a tyranny were to break out? Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. It's 10:32. This is The Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on The Generic Live Show for a Sunday. Glad to be with us here on the show. Want to give you everything you need to know. Of course, we are live on a Sunday around the world. Want to bring you all of the information that you need to know for your Sunday going into the week, of course. Sunday is known for the day to kind of get all of your information together to take it to the workplace, whether you're returning tomorrow morning or the day after, in terms of whether you are in Australia or in the US. Want to tell you more about the Turkish coup that took place over the weekend. I want to bring you the numbers first. We change our kind of opinions here. Changing the order in which that we're doing this. At least 265 have been killed, 1,440 wounded, with over 800 personnel have been revoked in the Turkish army. And that is all because of an army coup that we learnt last hour, a coup that happened from the army that was led from the opposition. Turkish Prime Minister now says that the government is now under control, but wanna bring you some of the details here. Wanna first bring you the information that you need. From Al Jazeera.
A coup attempt by an army faction in Turkey has been put down, Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim said, after thousands of people heeded a call from President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and took to the streets. Yildirim told broadcaster NTV that a no-fly zone had been declared over the capital, Ankara, blaming followers of US-based preacher Fethullah Gulen. The coup attempt is foiled, Turkey's National Intelligence Agency had earlier said in a statement. Sections of the Turkish army had earlier officially declared a coup and martial law, saying that they had taken control of the country as Istanbul's main airport was closed and fighter jets were seen in the skies. Erdogan, in a phone call to broadcaster CNN Turk on Friday, said he remained the president of the country and the head of the army and called for people to take to the streets against the coup. "We will overcome this," Erdogan said, speaking on a video call to a mobile phone held up to the camera by a presenter. He called on his followers to take to the streets to defend his government and said the coup plotters would pay a heavy price. An official said Erdogan was speaking from Marmaris on the Turkish coast, where he was on holiday. Erdogan said he would swiftly return to Ankara. "Watch our rolling coverage of the attempted coup in Turkey. In the capital Ankara, gunshots and loud explosions were heard, as military jets and helicopters were seen flying overhead," a Reuters news agency witness said. The state-run Anadolu agency reported that a military helicopter had attacked the Ankara police headquarters, and Reuters said the parliament was surrounded with tanks. Another Reuters witness reported hearing gunfire at Istanbul airport. "We know they have been acting outside the chain of command," Cemalettin Hazimi, a government spokesman, told Al Jazeera, referring to the sections of the army behind the coup attempt. "But forces of democracy have managed to take the situation back under control. The parliament will get together in half an hour. An Al Jazeera correspondent in the coastal city of Izmir reported an unusually heavy military buildup in the city earlier in the day. Live blog, minute-by-minute updates on developments across Turkey. In Gaziantep, a city in the south, Al Jazeera's Zina Khodr reported that supporters of Erdogan had taken to the streets.
And that is information, and here is what that sounded like. Here is that reporter giving what's happening on the ground.
Do know that earlier there were reports that military jets and helicopters were flying low over the capital Ankara, and that the two bridges crossing the Bosphorus River in Istanbul have been closed, or at least partially closed, by the army. There's also multiple reports of tanks on the Antep. Zeyna, it's one pass.
Yes, carrying
out some sort of a coup.
Apologies for the skipping. Here's now that audio of what it looked like on the ground.
Oh, yes, a very confusing picture. But just in the past few minutes, the Turkish Prime Minister, in a statement, said that a military coup attempt is underway in Turkey. He is blaming a group of generals, a part of the military, but at the same time, he is saying that they will be punished, reassuring the public that they will do whatever is necessary and democracy is not under threat. In the past hour, there have been reports of Turkish tanks, armored vehicles on the streets of Turkey's main cities, Ankara, Istanbul. There were reports and of jets flying low over the capital, the Turkish capital, Ankara, a stepped-up military presence in Istanbul, unusual activity, really, in these main cities. The bridges over the Bosphorus have been blocked by soldiers. It's been shut to traffic. Turkish people were on the social media asking questions, a very confusing picture on what is going on. But now we've heard from the Turkish Prime Minister, a military coup attempt is underway in Turkey, but he is confident that they will be able to overcome this. Now, Turkey has had a history of military coups in the past. The last time was in 1997, but since then, there has been stability, but at the same time, Turkey, as a country, has been passing through very difficult times.
That is the reporter on the ground there talking about that. I did not know that Turkey had a coup in 1997. Though, I don't know if world media and online media wasn't big in 1997. I do know that. I wasn't aware of that because it wasn't covered in mainstream media, but that's a whole other conversation, not relevant for now. Here is, we'll skip over to CNN, where the Prime Minister will talk about the coup plotters and what is in store for them. And in just a little bit of a moment here, we're having trouble getting the audio relayed through. We'll fix that. But here, we're crossing live to the audio now.
As you know, we have just left a very grave incident. The detentions are still, arrests are still being made. It's not entirely complete. And also the crime committed is very clearly defined in our legal system. As known, dear friends, the capital punishment have been taken out of the Turkish constitution and Turkish legal system. Today, our noble assembly will get together and discuss the measures that can be taken to prevent Turkey will not face this sort of madness again in the future. Whichever legal measures need to be taken. We will discuss with other party leaders and we will work on them.
Turkish Prime Minister there talking about the death penalty for people, and if they were to choose to use it, they can use it. Mentioned last hour if the government is why the world would not be ready for another world war, if we wouldn't be ready for world treason. Here's another view. Would our neighbours help us in times of need? Now, really weird. It's really convenient also. You've got to think the bordering countries of Turkey. Syria is one of them. So there is that as well to consider. Syria is a neighbour country to Turkey. They're not intervening because Syria has got bad people. They want people to commit bad things. Would our neighbors here, would they help in a sense in terms of if we were in trouble, would New Zealand help us? Would Indonesia help us? I'm more than aware if a third world country like Vanuatu, for example, was bombed, and we see this all the time, though, with external factors, in terms of external factors coming in. For example, earthquakes around the nation. Everyone tries to get as many goodwill points as we can, but that is a one place, that is a singular event. Ongoing event is probably a different suggestion. A rolling event would be one that we're seeing in Turkey, where numbers are not moving now, but numbers are certainly have been moving. Would our neighbours help us in a time like this? Depending on who the neighbours are. It's always, and even in the micro level, it really depends on who your neighbours are. Your neighbours have to be good people. Your neighbours have to be loving. You've got to think as well of what makes up that country at the top, and even on the micro level, you see it on the micro level as well. A good, hard-working family would help out another good, hard-working family. But a person who is kind of a slob isn't going to help a hard-working family because it doesn't impact them directly. You've got to think that we're moving into that sort of direction in terms of society as well, where we don't help out our neighbours as much as we should do. I mean, I'm guilty of this myself. I shouldn't paint myself as some sort of angel here. But you think of that as well. Would you help out your neighbours if they were struggling? Absolutely. You help out your family members in times of need. But probably that's a better way of thinking about it, is think of allies and stuff as family members as opposed to allies. You think of them family members, you give them a fair shot. So that's my perspective on it, at least. But I don't know about if it's a popular opinion for anyone else. Just there are a few questions that you need to ponder about this, and it's interesting to ponder them, if that makes sense. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, thanks for joining us. Well, everyone, we've had a heavy show. It's time for something a little bit lighter. How about a rapid-fire review of reviews? Everyone's favorite segment, Review of Reviews, is coming back. I think this is the third one that I've done since the relaunch of the Generic Live Show. A review of a review. Ghostbusters came out in North America last week, or is coming out in North America, and it's time to do some reviews of a review. Ghostbusters edition. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show, whether you're listening to us live or on your hard drive. Glad to be with us. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. It's 10:51. Never miss a minute of the Generic Live Show. Find us on Blog Talk Radio. Just search Generic Live Show and listen. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us. It's glad to be here. Good to be with you. It's Dale Campbell with you for a Sunday. Isn't this amazing? I found this and I reckon it's going to be on my list forever. Here we go. Ready?
Open Gangnam Style.
That is, it's a mashup of Gundam Style and Ghostbusters called Gangnam Busters. It's by Far Off. Thank you for allowing us to play that. It's amazing. So check it out if you haven't already. But you know what that means? Everyone's favorite segment is back. It's a review of a review, and we haven't got much time left on the show, so we're going to make this, I was going to do a rapid fire, but I found a long one. That is making me so happy. I read it briefly in commercial break, and wow, okay. There are 10 points, rather. Okay. There are 10 points in this movie. The review title is, "This Movie Makes Me So Sad." Now, this is by Girly Card L on IMDb. It's one star. It's one star. Now, keep in mind that I'm not going to try and make this as least hostile. What? Okay. First, there are too many commas in this sentence. So here we go. I'm going to say all the commas. Here we go. Ready? Now, comma. Keep in mind that I'm going to make this as least hostile as possible, comma. But when this movie is this hypercritical, comma, bigoted, comma, and ignorant, comma, there is nothing good that can be said about it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 commas. I mean, I'm not the most... Here we go. I'm not the most grammatical person in the world, but... Yeah. Yeah. One. Oh, sorry. Except for the people who are literally bribed into writing positive reviews. One. This movie was stolen. Everything in the... It's called a reboot, love, first of all. Second of all, everything in this movie was stolen from the first two. It's called a reboot, you twat! They literally did... Okay. All right. One. This movie was stolen. Everything in this movie was stolen from the first two. All they did was literally take the first movie and replace the action parts with the horror parts. Oh my god. All right, we're going to run long. This is going to be a long one. Two, the sexism. This is probably the most sexist movie I've seen since Doomsday Machine. Oh my god. They replaced the entire main cast with only women to appeal to radical feminists. When your ideology discriminates against who you can cast in a role, that is called feminist. No, and that's not a good thing. No, that's called Hollywood. And first of all, second of all, I kind of agree with the sexism point. I mean, they did have male actors in there, though. Anyway, we're running super late today, so I don't want to go super long. The bland lobotomized token male. Oh, the bland lobotomized token male. Pretty much the only main character who was a man turned into a stereotype. He is useless, annoying, fake, and had an IQ below sea level.
Wow. Ouch.
I'm going to use that as an insult. An IQ level below... Had an IQ below sea level. I'm adding words in here that belong in here, by the way. Was clearly to pretend to be Brad Pitt, but none of the acting talent. He is also hired because of his looks, and that's Chris Hemsworth? Liam Hemsworth? One of the Hemsworth brothers. By the way, because they tried to get Brad Pitt, but he turned it down. I'm rolling my eyes so hard right now. 4, the racism. The only black character turned into a loud, annoying, street-smart stereotype.
Fair.
5, the CG. It's terrible. Very cartoon-like. Duffy Duck the early years. I mean, you didn't have to put Duffy Duck in there, but anyway. 6, the acting. Not a single main character in the movie could act. No one. It looked like grade school drama club. Okay. Sentences are structurally fine, actually. I'll give this person that. 7, the comedy. Every single joke felt flat. I didn't laugh once at anything they said. Well, okay, first of all, duh. That sentence goes without saying because you sat there and wanted to write this 1-star review. Okay, let me talk about this for a second. We are really late, but I don't really care at this point. I'm having too much fun. You went to sit down to this, to have this, to sit down and do this 1-star review. You had intention to do this 1-star review. Then you threw the sentence in there that says that you didn't laugh once because you were annoyed. Many of the jokes were sexist too. The trailer, perfect summary of the movie. Every single joke was dumbed down because Paul Feig had no respect for his audience. Well, that's not true. He just wanted something... anyway. The entitlement. The cast director have been throwing a hissy fit every time... Ever since... Blah! The sentence is terrible. The cast and director have been throwing a hissy fit ever since people saw what garbage was first... Okay, that sentence, I'm not even trying to dissect it. Pretty much everyone cracked up the shits because everyone hated the trailer. 9, so boring. This movie didn't take any chances, didn't expand the Ghostbusters universe in any way. It's called a reboot, love. 10, the product placement, it's everywhere. There might have not been a single scene where there were advertising in the background. It may be long for the days of Food Fight. Weird. In conclusion, nobody should give their money to lazy fat cats again. I, for one, will never be buying another Sony product in my life. If you pay to see this movie, you are a bad person. Okay. Wow. Alright. We're running late, so I'm going to give this review a 6, because there are some pretty dirt lines in here, but she was very eloquent of what she was trying to say. I'll give her that. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. That was a review of a review. Glad I could be here with you. It's Dale Campbell. It's 11:02.
This has been a Chef Wonder Media production. For more, visit chefwondermedia.net. Delivered fresh to your ear holes. Copyright 2016.
This has been a podcast of the Geek AO Media Network, where you put your geek in and geek out. For more geeky goodness, head over to geek-io.net. Copyright 2016.